Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Yeah? Nod, wave your hand if you can hear okay. Yes, you're live. Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you for coming along to the session today. We're going to, Stephen and I are going to share with some stories about how we work with customers and getting value out of Yammer. How many of you guys are from, anyone here from Telstra? Hands up. Like, really hand up. One more, two? All right. So you know the next person I'm going to talk about, this wonderful gentleman here, is where your ex-CEO, David Thodey. And last year, I had the, I guess, the fortune of sitting with him for an hour and talk about reflecting over his career at Telstra and how he was using Yammer to drive change in Telstra. And I'm going to start by giving you some stories about what came out of that interview with David. I guess after he left, he could be a little bit more open about, you know, what had happened and what he was doing. So I'll be sharing some of those thoughts with you. You all know Telstra is such a famous brand name. When David joined Telstra, the key problem, as he articulated it to us, was that they didn't have a customer-centric culture. It was one of the key things he noticed when he joined. And he thought, how am I going to change that? It was more of a technical, people were really interested in the technical aspects, and hopefully you'll recognize that, those of you that are here from Telstra. He felt that it was very, very siloed, email-centric, and he felt, as a CEO, that things were filtered. Real information from the front line didn't get to him, was filtered off through the hierarchy, and he had recognized that. And other thing with Thodey was, he's very passionate about having authentic conversations, and he didn't feel that they were really happening about what the real problems were and how to fix them. So actually, the way he came to realize that Yammer was something that he ought to have a much closer look at was that it was sort of already running as a grassroots initiative in Telstra. And he heard some stories about how people on the front line had issues when they were trying to solve problems for customers. And there was this, some people that apparently got some help from other people in the organization to solve those customer problems. And that's really what got him hooked. Remember his key problem, how do we have a customer-centric culture? He's a guy that was very focused on getting outcomes and not just making sure that we follow the process. The outcome beats the process. And he felt that Yammer was a way that they could cut through some of the bureaucracy and actually getting results faster. So he got really locked into Yammer and decided that that's what they should be doing. And interesting, this is not David Thodey's office, but you can imagine when you are the CEO for such a large organization, things can look very, very rosy up at that executive penthouse floor, right? Because everything sort of gets filtered off, and you're always being told that there are no issues, everything is fine, the mobile network is fine, it's not going to break down, you know, all those sort of things. And suddenly things happen, and they don't see that. But if you take the elevator down to the ground floor, then that's where all the noise, it's kind of polluted, it's ugly, it's a bit messy, that's where stuff happens. And what Yammer did, it allowed him to basically have a view from the basement, level one, and all the way up to his sort of, if you like, his penthouse view. So for him, one of the key things he told us was that process were enablers for getting work done, but they could not become impediments. Now, so how do you do that? You know, how many of you were here for Angus and Steve Wynn's presentation this morning about the Yammer roadmap? Hands up. Okay, cool. So one of the things Steve said, there's some really simple things you can do, right? Remember that? Here's one really simple thing that David Thodey did. He put out a little note to everyone saying, team, please post or add your top time wasting and unnecessary approval or process that we will either fix it or explain why it exists. Look forward to your thoughts. We must reduce unproductive work. Kind regards, David. David doesn't poke, he doesn't get someone else to post or didn't. He would do it himself with typos and everything else. He would post himself. Real, authentic conversations. 873 replies to that thread. Now, what I've been told, not by David, but for people in Telstra, was about 60% of the ideas that that were presented through this threat was actually implemented. I think this is a really simple thing to do, right? And Steve is going to be talking much more about examples about how you can drive innovation through organizations through Yammer. So what else did David Thodey learn from him using Yammer? He used Yammer to break down stereotypes of management. And he talked about a situation where there was a discussion happening on Yammer where someone had posted and said, we should really be doing this. We should be doing this to be more customer-centric or to delight the customers. And someone else would have replied, no. Management is never going to agree to that. You'll never get anywhere with this. And Thodey interjected and said, hello, I'm management. You know, I don't think this is such a bad idea. So the ability to correct perception about what management actually believes and supports was a hugely important objective and outcome. Starting conversations, the threat about how can we eliminate wasteful processes is another one that he highlighted. And getting feedback. He gave examples of how they used Yammer to, if you like, pre-launch policies and say, we're about to do this. What do you think about it? Is this going to be good for us or bad for us? And he even gave examples of where they had rolled out policies that turned out to have unintended consequences. And he said, if we'd only had that conversation on Yammer before we launched it, we could have learned about what we're about to do. So really, really powerful things from David. One of the things that I guess I got personally most inspired by hearing from a CEO for such a large company was this quote here. It changed me personally. I learned things. Because when you're sitting up, and you probably recognize that from many large organizations, getting to the top is quite a lot of competition going on. So there's almost an expectation that you are an expert. And be willing to say publicly that I learned things. It changed me personally. I think it's an incredibly brave thing for David Thodey to say. He also talked about change. The nature of work has changed. Collaboration is a necessity. It's not a nice to have. We had to change. And Yammer was a key tool for facilitating that change. Really, really powerful stuff. So a little bit about who am I. I'm really honored. There were three or four of us. I think they were not recently given the MVP badge from Microsoft, very honored about that. But we really do a lot of analytics on Yammer, and we also have done a lot of benchmarking. We've run the world's largest Yammer benchmarking study, and I'm going to weave in some of the results from that during this presentation today. And Steve, you can say who you are.
Can I? Thanks, Kai. So I'm Stephen Monk. I am the CTO of Engage Square. This is our new name. I haven't told any of our customers yet. So, hey, we're changing our name. Hi to some of our customers that are in the audience. So I started a SharePoint agency a few years ago in London, came over to Australia, opened up an Australian office. Now we've got a few offices in Australia and Auckland, and we do lots of SharePoint, Office 365, and Yammer. We actively work with three of the top 10 engaged worldwide networks of Yammer around the world, but we also help to launch Yammer with large and small organizations and really get it established as a good business productivity tool. I like to joke, I started life as a developer, so I wrote code, I still write a bit of code, mostly look after developers these days as well, so I'm a bit of a techie, but really found that Yammer is a fantastic tool for unlocking value in organizations, and we love working with organizations from the technical side all the way through to the business change and adoption side to really drive Yammer usage and help other organizations get the most out of Yammer in their organizations. Cool.
Okay. A little bit more about Thodey's perspective about why the world has changed and why collaboration is now a necessity. The nature of work has changed, as I'm sure you're all very much aware. There's a lot of research around what the nature of that is, and just highlighting a few points. I often ask people, so can any of you actually do work in isolation? Can you do work just on your own? And most people go, oh, I can't actually. What about in your team? Can your team get stuff done? Well, actually, we need to work with that team over there, and there's another team over there. And it becomes this really sort of, I wouldn't call it mess, because not. It's just that this increased reliance on other people to get work done. And that's the corporate executive board did a survey of, I think, 23,000 people. And more than 50% said that the need to interact or to coordinate work with others is just increasing. So it's not just something we feel. There's evidence behind that. And so you can ask, well, isn't that slowing us down? Isn't that making us unproductive? Or isn't that not very profitable? Wouldn't it be better if I can just do stuff on my own? But the reality is different. Linda Gardner, she's a professor at Harvard. I'm not sure. I think she's an associate professor at Harvard. Has written a book called Smart Collaboration. And what I'd really love you to do is, of course not now, but after the session, just type into Bing, when senior managers won't collaborate, right? It's a good time. When senior managers won't collaborate. And you'll find this little chart here. Heidi's work, she analyzed thousands and thousands of hours of timesheet entries in a range of large professional services companies where they track time. And she then could then correlate their interaction patterns with profitability. And what she found was that the more collaboration that we're having across service lines, the more profitable the professional services firms were. And there were three things that made this a standout a winner. First of all, more revenue, and you can see that from over here. The more service or practice areas we engage, the more profitable we become. But the second one, we become really hard to replace if we have different parts of the organization working together to serve a client. Imagine if you're just doing tax advice. Well, I can get tax advice from anyone. If I do tax and IP and four other things, that becomes a bundle that's hard to replace. And then attracting and retaining talent is very, very much more interesting when you work in a multidisciplinary team because I learn new things. So it actually, there's a lot of ROI, and Heidi's book on smart collaboration provides a compelling set of statistics for the financial return on collaboration across business units. So it's happening, like Thodey is saying, we need to get, it's a necessity, and we're actually making money from it. Now, I'm interested in analytics, right? And I'm interested in measuring how this actually happens. And the problem is we have a fundamental sort of defect in our thinking about relationships. And I'll give you an example of this. Here we have three words: cow, chicken, and grass. You don't have to say anything, but I'll just challenge you to think about which is the odd one out. Which word is the odd one out? Now, if you said grass is the odd one out, cow and chicken, they go together, raise your hand. Okay? How many of you said, no, chicken is the odd one out? Oh, lots of you. That's fantastic. You can see there's a big difference between these two, right? One is thinking about the two terms as a taxonomy or grouping. This one is thinking about the relationship that the cow has with the grass. We're thinking relationships. It's different to thinking categorization or taxonomy. Actually, this is much more associated with the Asian way of thinking than the first one, which is more associated with a classical or Western thinking. Maybe it's our position in the world. We're closer to Asia. I'm not sure about this, but I'm glad that there are so many people who think like this. Now, so let's take this into our organizations and this thinking about relationships versus structure. You know the one on the left-hand side, right? That's a classical org chart. Now, what are the lines represented on an org chart? Who reports to who, right? It's got nothing about who we actually work with in most organizations. Actually, how work gets done is through relationships. Or as Ron Burt, who is a professor at the University of Chicago, he said, if you want to lay blame, you follow that one. And if you want to get stuff done, it happens over there, right? So there's a big difference between thinking about relationships and that being central to your thinking. And actually what we're seeing within Office Graph and Delve is surfacing relationships. So we want to know who works with who. It helps us understand what is of interest to you. So hugely important concepts. In terms of leadership, like think about David Thodey. Here's a little thing for you to ponder over. The Mythbusters guys, remember those, the two wonderful Americans that got this wonderful show? They tested the efficiency of a four-way intersection. You know the rule here? They wanted to see how many cars did you get through. Bear with me, this has to do with leadership, right? Believe it or not. They ran an experiment for 15 minutes, and they said, how many cars can we get through this sort of configuration? Do you know that? You come up to the line, you stop, you wait, you see, is anyone there? You stop, even though there's no one there, you will stop, right? You check for traffic, and then you go through. How many cars, like, have you got any idea? 15 minutes? No, you probably haven't got an idea. I'll just say it was 385 cars you can get through in 15 minutes. Now, let's change the configuration, right? Let's put someone in the middle and direct the traffic. You could think manager. Now, how many cars can we now get through in 15 minutes? More? Raise your hand. Less? Raise your hand. Man, have you seen this before? 289 cars can get through the roundabout. Now, that's a third option, right? That is to have a roundabout. What's the rule in a roundabout? Yeah. My dad used to say that. The minimum amount of time you spend in traffic, you know, the less is likelihood you'll have an accident. So just go boom, and you nothing will happen. Not a really good piece of advice. 460 cars. Now just think about the management style, right? This one really is getting work done through the network. It's about me making a decision. I'm gonna choose right here in that right moment in time, what am I gonna do? I'm not gonna rely on a manager. I'm not gonna be just, you know, saying, I'll just wait and I'll be told whether I'm gonna go over and work with you. Actually here, I'm gonna hold myself accountable, and I know that if I'm not really in control here, something's gonna happen to me, but I'm ultimately empowered. The first one is much more like a business process. You know, I'm gonna follow the rule no matter what. And it's not so efficient. So, different leadership styles. David Thodey was obviously one that was advocating for more the authentic, get work done, just do it, don't worry too much about the process. There are some processes we do have to worry about, but don't get stuck in the process, just get on with it. And Yammer was a fantastic enabling tool for doing that.
Thanks, Kai. And of course, you should drive on the right side of the road, right? So some processes are important.
Yes.
So we promised you we would share some lessons, and I think that's what we'll move on to now. We've talked a little bit about why it's important to have a network, and what we want to focus on now is really thinking about what you can do as you build that network up. What might you use Yammer for in your organization, and why is having a network within an organization a really good catalyst for getting work done more effectively and efficiently? One thing that we've learned is that the reasons for having a Yammer network in an organisation vary from organisation to organisation. As Kai talked about earlier, Telstra's problem was that they didn't feel like they had good connections in the staff. They didn't feel like that translated into a good customer-centric culture. So they started to do things with Yammer that broke that down. And here we've collected some examples of, you know, reasons that other organisations that we work with use Yammer. We talk about breaking down silos, about fostering cross-organisation collaboration, that if you've got geographic boundaries, you've got boundaries between levels of seniority, you've got different ways of communicating with you in your organisation, that Yammer can really help to break down those boundaries and produce a more effective and efficient workforce. Also, you know, things like discussing ideas and becoming more efficient, improving processes and looking at ways that you can improve the business as a whole, not just work more efficiently, but create better processes or ignore some of the processes and get rid of things that get in the way.
Now, one thing, right? This is about business strategy, right? It's about understanding why is it that we're using Yammer. So we're going to do a little exercise, a little team exercise. I want you to all stand up, please. Please, everyone stand up. And now, without hurting anyone, right, I want you to close your eyes. Without hurting anyone, still close your eyes. And then when I say go, you're going to do something. Don't think much about it. Close your eyes. Now point to the direction of what you believe is north. Keep your eyes closed. Point north. And while you keep on pointing, now open your eyes and just look around. Now this is what strategic misalignment looks like. All right? Now you can sit down again. If we don't have, and I'll just to let you know, north is that way. North that way. Now, when we talk about, we're going to roll out Yammer, we're going to have a digital workplace, we're going to do this, this, and that, and we're all pointing in our own minds in here, there, 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 it's really hard to get to a common perspective of what are we actually doing. And therefore, having these conversations of why is it we're doing it, what are the achievements, what are the goals we're trying to aim for, is really, really important. Otherwise, it'll end up like, I hope we're not going to run a company together. All right, back to you.
Thanks. So, quick survey. Who has an established Yammer network in their organizations? Cool. And who has been told by their boss that they need to launch a Yammer network in their organization soon? Some. And who would like to have a Yammer network but can't? Some. All right. That's interesting. It's good to see actually a lot of people that are using it. So the start of what we work with our customers on a lot is of establishing a successful Yammer network is this strategic alignment, is working out why do we want to have a Yammer network, what is it for, and how do we get the most out of it. I'm probably willing to bet that many of you with an established network would like it to be better, would like it to be more productive and to be helping with some fundamental business problems. If you don't yet have a Yammer network, then you've got to start thinking about actually what's it for and why are we pushing it out across the organisation. And so this is the model that we've developed across many engagements working with customers to try and identify what those strategic reasons are. Build around a business strategy, identifying the underlying or the high-level organisational goals. We'll then talk to people across all sorts of areas of the organisation to work out, okay, how do we translate those strategic goals into operational needs? How do we use Yammer then to achieve some of those operational needs or other bits of the Office 365 suite as well, not just necessarily siloed down? So we look at identifying business cases, scenarios and use cases, prioritising those, working with the organisation to work out what will produce the most benefit, and then going through a bit of a cycle to refine those through use, sort of an agile methodology, looking for feedback on how well the tools map against those sorts of use cases, getting some feedback and seeing how are our employees in those organisations responding to and adopting those tools, and then starting to update and expand and roll out new use cases. So we'll take the use cases that we've identified, prioritise them, identify the ones that are likely to produce the most benefit, find champions to help to drive those and make those champions accountable for achieving the outcomes from introducing those new ways of working, and then set up the tools, start to roll them out, and then measure for success and work out how is that working, is it working, what do we need to do differently, how can we get users to adopt or map their ways of working to these technologies. And then we repeat and look at doing that over the course of a 12 or 18 month cycle so that the technology is just not rolled out in a vacuum, it's rolled out for a particular purpose, that it helps people to get work done and therefore helps to achieve some of those strategic outcomes for the organisation. So in practice, that looks something like this. Now, this is a lot of words, but take this template away. But the idea is we've worked with the organisation to identify use cases that are important. In this organisation, they didn't have really great ways of developing communities of practice. So they wanted to facilitate really good communities of practice within the organisation. They've identified some benefits so they can explain to senior management why they want to adopt the technology and what sorts of challenges that's going to address. They've mapped some success metrics so that they know how to measure to see whether that's been a success. And they've got an owner. So Toby is in charge of achieving this outcome. He's got Yammer to do that, and he's got 3 months before we come back and measure to see how successful that has been. And we've sort of documented all of that. Now, we did this exercise with one organisation of roughly 1,000 people in Melbourne, and they ended up with a list of about 40 different use cases that they thought, here are problems in the organisation. These are people that we want to empower to solve those problems. Here are the technical the tools that we're going to give them to try and achieve that. We then whittled that down and identified 10 that we wanted to test out in that first wave, and then supported them, identified owners, provided training, established a process for measuring and adopting that, and then set them loose on the technology. And then looped back in 3 months and looked at what worked, what didn't work, and helped to adapt that. So all of these then align back to those original strategic objectives, right? We want to push out ways of working that will help businesses become more efficient, map that through to their overall organisational objectives. So a couple of things that we've learnt from this. As we roll out across different organisations, We want to make sure that we've got the right people helping us to achieve those use cases. So we want to seek volunteers to help out with this. We want to get people who are interested in driving new technology in the organisation to help out. It's important that it's not purely self-selection. It does need to be a little bit of filtering to make sure we've got a good cross-section of people from different parts of the organisation, different levels of seniority, so that we can map against those different levels of or different ways of working and make sure that the technology has a good breadth of adoption. But getting members of the organisation who are motivated to help out can be really important. So here's an example. Obviously, this Yammer network was during pilot, so they haven't got a huge network, but they have managed to get a couple of hundred people into the network at this stage. And they've put a call out to get people involved. And this was taken only 2 days after it was posted, and they already had 19 volunteers. And then we started to filter that down and work out who are best placed to help out with this sort of research. It's important as you build up your champion community to encourage them as well. So through Yammer, through other mechanisms, make sure that we are recognising good contributions and recognising the way that those champions are driving that adoption. Again, mapped back to the measures that we've got and the strategic outcomes that we're trying to achieve, but looking at what can we do to encourage and reward those adoptive behaviours. So in this case, you know, we're rolling Skype out to, rolling Yammer out via Skype to people in Western Australia. You know, it's a difficult, sometimes in some organisations, difficult community to engage, and we want to make sure that we're breaking down the geographic barriers by using new technology. So a really nice example of that. And then looking at building early adopters as well. So we've got champions, they're out there encouraging participation in the network, encouraging business-focused adoption. We're praising them for helping to drive that activity. And then we're also engaging them by asking them to help shape the next wave, providing feedback into the way that those use cases are rolled out, helping to shape the new technology as it's brought in. And here's a really great example of a competition that was run to name a new intranet that was being rolled out on SharePoint. So leveraging that early adopter Yammer network to identify and run a poll to name the new intranet. And, you know, 1,000 votes, 59 replies, lots of interesting collaboration within the network there. A couple of steps that we can use to build up and really roll out that. So I think the steps there, identifying the strategic objectives for the organisation, engaging with senior leaders and other champions across the organisation to identify the pain points and use cases that could be adopted onto the technology, building out the champion network and encouraging them to do it, and then rolling out the technology and measuring to see how that's going, and then adapting off the back of the measurements. Now, Steve talked this morning about the different uses for Yammer. I put up a few of those ideas to start with. We look at pretty common sort of early stage adoption where we've got this sort of use of Yammer as a social network, using it to build up the network, but also a communication channel for senior executives to broadcast out to the organisation, to run Yam Jams, to post, you know, company-wide messages, and connect around social interests. Also look at what a more mature Yammer network's doing and shifting towards the right, or introducing some of the business behaviours on Yammer from the right. So looking at replacing existing processes and tools, or building meaningful two-way collaboration. And I'll return to this slide a bit later to just map some of the sorts of things that we've seen work at different customers that we work with onto these sorts of activities. But I think to give a bit of a theoretical framework to that, Simon Terry, who's a Yammer MVP, has been talking for a long time about the Yammer maturity model. And look at this as a stage of maturity of your Yammer network. In early days on your Yammer network, it's really about driving connections. And that should be your primary objective, is to build adoption to break down some barriers, to connect people from different parts of the organisation and build up that sort of network. Once you've got that sort of network built up, then people will start to share. They'll start to talk about what they're doing, talk about problems that they're having within the organisation, or start to talk about ways in which they think the organisation can improve. Once you've built up some of that sharing behaviour, then you look at the solving behaviours. So people start to pose questions or pose solutions, talk about ways in which the organisation can get better. but also because they're able to build on those networks, they can then start to identify other people within the organisation that they're connected to who can help them solve their problems. So it's no longer these silos of individuals trying to solve their problems or teams getting around a conference table to try and solve problems. And suddenly you've opened up the whole organisation and you've connected people with each other in such a way that they're able to solve their own problems more effectively. And then as you build up those sorts of behaviours, you start to see innovation happening in your Yammer network, where people are actively suggesting ways that the whole organisation could be made better, coming up with ideas for new products or ideas for removing processes and tools and, you know, streamlining the operation. And we look at this as a bit of a continuum, but I guess from our point of view, what we've learnt is that actually that adoption story can start to target some of those more advanced levels early on as a way of building up the base in the network as well. So it is important to have connections across the organisation. It's really important that we can connect across geographic boundaries, that experts can find each other from different teams, that as your network grows, people will be able to identify others that can help them solve their problems. But what we've identified is that if we try and target some of those behaviours on day one, it helps to build up that base, it helps to connect people through a bit of a push, and then they will start to adapt and will see value earlier on. So some examples of where we've done that in some organisations, by using this model that I talked about before, identifying pain points and use cases that map to the strategy, helping to train up champions and then roll out those use cases onto technology and get some business-focused adoption to help solve those problems. We've been able to work with lots of really great organisations to get really great value out of Yammer and help them build up their Yammer networks in the process. I'll give you some examples of some of our customers here. And some of these customers are consulting customers that we work with. We run adoption campaigns with them and we help them to build up those sorts of networks and run activities. Some of them are customers of our innovation product, which sits on top of Yammer and helps to manage the administration of those sorts of activities. And British Airways falls into this second category, or rather International Airways Group, I think, who have Iberia as well as British Airways. So, you know, it's a multinational example. So they use it to connect the executive to employees, to really break down barriers in much the same way that David Bodie was doing at Telstra, to try and get the executive to get a better feel for what's happening on the ground, to not just have their ivory tower view, but to get in touch with what's happening on the front line. And you can see here a really great email, or Yammer message, obviously it's not an email, coming out of Alex Cruz, the CEO of British Airways, who is reporting back on an innovation campaign that he ran, a set of messages that he posted on Yammer to try and solicit ideas for how they could make British Airways better, and looking really at quick improvements for their mobile app in this instance. So how can they make their user experience for end customers better? And they got 573 ideas come through in the course of a week. Right, that is a huge number. So they used this tool and they filtered them down and they were able to quickly identify hot topics or very easy ways to drive adoption. But you can see some of the sentiment that's come through there to look at, you know, in general, this is viewed very positively by the organisation. So it helps to build up not just the executive's view of the organisation, but build up this company culture where the employees of British Airways feel like they're being listened to and that the CEO is actually interested in their ideas and that their ideas can help shape the customer experience for British Airways customers. You can see he's called out next steps in his message there. So it's not just something that's happened in isolation. He's been able to identify actions that come out of this and then enact some of the ideas that have come from this set of messages. And I guess in the same way that David Thodey was looking for ways to improve the processes and approaches within Telstra and was able to action a lot of the things coming out of that and then celebrate the fact that it's been actioned. Here, Alex Cruz is doing the same sort of thing, looping back to say, hey, your feedback is important to us and we're going to improve our end-user experience for customers off the back of your engagement. This is a really nice way of building down or breaking down some of those barriers, building up employee morale, but also improving the end experience for customers. Similar sort of idea at Virgin Trains. So we talked earlier about aligning to a particular strategy in the organisation. And one of the strategies that Virgin has is a culture of innovation. You know, they're a sexy brand, they have a really great customer-focused experience, but they want to also go a step further and be innovative. And they've got some corporate drivers to do that as well. It's not just a matter of them driving innovation for innovation's sake. They've got a lot of challenges within their industry. You know, the cost of energy, they have to become more efficient, but there's also a lot of competition in their market, and they need to be able to do things effectively and efficiently by continuing to improve their service offering and continuing to improve the way that they do things. So they are really interested in driving this culture of innovation. And you can see a few campaigns that they ran using Yammer functionality, like hashtags to tag the campaigns. And they run this on a continuous basis, but with different campaign ideas as they go through, tied back to that strategy of building innovation. Generating hundreds of different ideas, filtering through them, and being able to then implement some of those ideas in the organisation.
Can I just ask, how many of you guys use hashtags on your Yammer networks? Hands up. Yeah. A lot or little? A lot, okay. One of the things you'll be surprised is that we found out that this can be used as a leading indicator of success of an organizational initiative. So we know of organizations that are, every time they run a strategic initiative, they start a conversation on Yammer using a hashtag. And the hashtags that, if you like, takes off leads to an initiative that's taking off. Because when you engage people in conversation, it's because they're interested in it. So suddenly Yammer becomes this leading indicator for whether or not you're actually realizing the business outcomes of a major strategic initiative. So don't necessarily just think about how do we launch Yammer, but how are we going to achieve clean 2016? How are we going to achieve this? And then just use as Yammer as the enabler. And you can then see, we had no one really talking about value for money. We had lots of people talking about this one up here. So what was it we did differently? How come people were so engaged on that topic but not that one?
I think that's a good point. I mean, we talked before about measuring the success and identifying how you tweak things going forward. Virgin Trains has a very engaged network, and they've been able to build that up over a course of a few years. And doing things like this has managed to increase the engagement of that organisation. So, they've got something like 65% active usage of their Yammer network, which is, for an organisation of their size, is very impressive. And they've done that by doing activities on there, using it for corporate strategic purposes, but also looping back and working out what works and measuring and then turning or changing as they run those in the future. So some, four sort of steps towards innovation campaigns. We find that innovation campaigns are really nice fit for this, but also a really good way of generating that sort of sticky engagement and strategic value coming out of the organisation. So pick a hashtag, collect the ideas, filter the ideas down. You can do it in a spreadsheet. You can use a tool to do that. Identify the top set of ideas. You may have a review panel of experts that identify and review those. And then get executives to review that and filter down and then identify the final outcomes and then action them. And so in the case of this campaign, several million pounds saved by collecting those ideas and implementing them off the back of the innovation campaign that was run. I think this review step is a really great opportunity as well to get your senior leaders engaged in the network. We talk about key identifiers of success on networks, and senior leader engagement can be a really key identifier of that sort of success. If you can get your senior leaders posting on Yammer and asking questions and being engaged like the CEOs of British Airways and Telstra, then it's much more likely to improve that engagement from employees across the organisation. And this is a really great way of getting them involved at the start, identify what are the needs of the organisation and how are we going to solicit ideas from the organisation to solve those. But then you're able to loop back through to them and then entrust them to action some of those outcomes. And as an example, a global drinks company that we've worked with ran an innovation campaign. Over the course of 4 weeks, they had 3,500 interactions on Yammer. They were able to identify 600 ideas and those ideas save them a lot of money. Things like, actually one of the ideas was fixing a gas leak in a plant in North Africa. So I'm not sure if that would have been identified through other means or not. But, you know, there were lots of different ideas around better routes to market, about connecting sales staff with marketing more efficiently, about getting field staff engaged in the product design. These sorts of things were able to be quantified and then driven through and implemented and ultimately to save money. So the review process that I talked about before, we like to, when we engage with senior leaders, to identify what are the criteria that they're going to use to assess those ideas. And things like ability to implement are important. In this case, how much money would it save the organisation? But also, you know, looking for diversity of opinions and implementing opinions and ideas from across their geographies. And they all went into that filtering process to identify which ideas would be implemented and then how would you come out of that. Now, this is actually not that hard to do. It doesn't take that long to run an innovation campaign on your Yammer network. And you can obviously map this across to other sorts of activities that you might do. Map it back to your strategy, work out where are the pain points, and then you can run an innovation campaign or do other sorts of activities to do that. This innovation campaign, we had the internal comms team working over the course of a four-week period. There's obviously a bit of preparation beforehand, creating the materials to encourage people to post, to engage with your digital channels, to, you know, promote the competition and get people involved. But through the campaign, they needed to spend about a day per week in total. Then you get your experts involved to review the ideas and evaluate how possible it is, how achievable the outcomes are, to filter it down. And in this case, we asked those experts to spend between half an hour and 60 minutes to review the top 20 ideas that came out in their areas. And there were half a dozen sets of experts to help evaluate different sorts of ideas. And then finally, the top 10 ideas were passed on to the executive, and we asked them for 30 minutes each to vote and to identify those ideas. So, you know, in total, that's not a major commitment from the organisation, but can produce really amazing business outcomes for that organisation and actually also then drive Yammer usage to get a better connected organisation and to be able to generate then and leverage off that Yammer engagement to do other business strategic things. So I promised I'd loop back to this slide and then map to some of those examples that we've talked about and some other areas that we've looked at. And, you know, some things that we picked up here, replacing existing processes and tools. And Kai's talked about that at Telstra. We've talked about that, you know, in ideation and looking at innovation and ways that we can address that. But in an IT perspective, you can use Yammer to do issue reporting more effectively. And we use that at quite a lot of our customers to help customers get better access into their IT teams and have a much more visible, out loud conversation with those stakeholders so that people with the same problems can see what's happening, they're aware of the problem that's being undertaken, and they know what steps are being undertaken to resolve that. Look around about connecting around common objectives. So back to the business strategy, working out, you know, for Virgin Trains, they want to be an innovative company. That needs to pervade all of their activities on Yammer. Looking at things like cost savings, which are important for many organisations at various stages of their life. Looking at process optimisation and efficiency improvements. And all of that can be applied on Yammer and, you know, by sourcing the wisdom of the crowd or identifying or asking those staff to identify those areas where there are problems can much more easily address them. Building meaningful two-way collaboration. So some examples, you know, frontline and back office staff working together effectively. And I mentioned that example of our drinks manufacturer who found amazing benefits by connecting their external and frontline sales staff with their back office marketing staff and making sure that feedback from the customer was passed back into the product development team. And plenty of examples from that network of where ideas coming in from the frontline staff were actually used to shape the products that were sold to customers, ultimately leading to increase in sales. So connecting those disparate areas of the organisation helped produce a really good business outcome. Using groups for functional and project teams. So one of our customers has a group of 2,500 staff in retail stores who are talking to customers every day about what those customers want, what's good in their products, and where the gaps in their product line are. And they use this group to identify prototype products that are then put out into different stores to test. We ran a campaign with them last year and identified some really fantastic ideas. The senior leadership team were involved. They thought at the start they might implement 5 ideas that came out of that. And they ended up picking 15 of those ideas and putting them into stores, and 7 of them are still in stores as new products that are making that organisation money. And finally, measuring for business outcome, not just vanity. So we really, you know, in the early days, adoption is all about the number of messages, the amount of active users, the number of sign-ups. But actually, if we want to get business value out of the system, we need business objectives and we need to measure for those business outcomes. And that's probably a good segue back to Kai.
Yeah. I want to talk to you a little bit about what it is that makes Yammer such a different beast to the other wonderful aspects of Office 365. And we really like research and we like sort of evidence-based insight. So I want to give you some examples of some research we've done trying to see what makes Yammer such an interesting beast in terms of busting silos. Steve Wynn talked about this today. You remember this sort of chart? It's from actually some pretty old research now from early 80s. Tom Allen at MIT thought he'd have a look at in the 19, as I said, it was done in research done in 1979, published in 81 or 82, to see whether or not there's a relationship between how often we communicate and then how far away we are from each other physically. And what he found was that there was this clear deprecation, if you like, of interactions the further we are away. Now, fast forward to 2006, he redid that study to see, surely with email, like we think we all have email, right? Surely this can't be the same with email. But they found the exact same pattern, that we actually email people who are closer to us much, much more than those that are further away. It's sort of funny, isn't it, when email is supposed to be a tool that, you know, where we can talk to each other across distance. But I'm sure if you look at your own send box, a lot of the emails you got in your send box are probably to people that are sitting very, very close behind your team, right? So we looked at this in 2015 and said, surely now we've got all these collaboration tools, this has changed, right? So we looked at face-to-face relationships, and no surprise, right? Of course I interact more with those that I'm closer to. So if you and I sitting right next to you, I'll talk to you, right? That's obvious. Email, we were now down, not down to the 50-meter rule that Tom Allen found, where he said if we're more than 50 meters away, we don't interact. We found a 6-meter rule with emails. So half of all the emails sent was to someone sitting less than 6 meters away. Now, we do that and say, well, that's sort of interesting, right? We actually found the same with instant messaging, right? So instant messaging is also used for the people just around us. Yammer, though, just all over the place. There was no correlation between who am I sitting next to and then who I interact with on Yammer. So we thought, that's actually interesting, because Yammer does some things, and Steve talked about this, that there's no to, you know, in a Yammer post. It's not directed at anyone. And that means that the ability for that to sort of go across multiple different areas is totally different. Now, back to some very interesting research. Remember that little quote about if you want to get work done, then, you know, do the network thing? That was Ron Burt at University of Chicago. He came up with this model where he's saying, well, there is this sort of, there's this tension between having a very cohesive team, you know, where we all work closely together, and then having diversity, like where I'm interacting with lots of different people. And what he actually found was that really low productivity get when we are just sitting on our own, not talking to anyone, right? Actually, he found that the most highest performing teams, they had very strong cohesion, but they also reached out to other people. And then he found that you can have a very strong sort of cohesive teams that are in here. What's the problem with this sort of team, do you think? This sort of team in here, where they're all talking to themselves, but no one else. Yeah, groupthink, right? Those sort of things. And what's the challenge with this one up here? Yes, so the team doesn't really talk to each other. They're out there attending conferences, right? But the team isn't actually working together. Now, if we then start to map tools on top of this, right, you'll start to see that it sort of makes sense that all those that are really good at driving team cohesion, they sit down here. And if we continue to do the research that we've done, I think we'll continue to find that these tools are really good at connecting the teams within. But what's that also doing? It's strengthening the existing silos. It's actually allowing the business units to, because what we found is that teams that sit together also report to the same people. And if you don't have any opportunities to interact with people that are outside your business unit, you sort of get very siloed in your thinking. So Yammer is a different beast. We think Yammer sits up there. Because of this, it hasn't got a two-field, right? It allows you to reach out to other people that are sitting in other business areas. So it's a very, very unique value proposition that it has got. Now, the other thing we found when we looked, had a lot closer look at groups in Yammer is that what you've got to be really careful about is to just look at the activity within a group. Now, these two charts here, the first one up there, we just looked at how many posts and replies are happening within a group, which is oftentimes a metric that many organizations look at and say, oh, just like, surely if it's active, it must be good, right? But it's not really the case. Remember when I talked about cohesion, you know, that strong cohesion within a group? The blue chart down there talks about the level of cohesion within a group. Now, as you can see, there's no real correlation between these two. So you can have groups. It's actually much more important that there's strong cohesion in a group than just that they are very, very chatty, if you know what I mean. I can be sitting here posting all day, but if I'm not having any engagement with other people and engage with them, it's not really adding a lot of value. So, when you look at these two things together, there are three insights you get. First of all, it's the conversation that drives the value, not the activity. It's just the post, it's the conversation that's happening around it. The other thing is we know that just because there's high activity in its own right does not equal that it's going to give us value. But if we have high activity plus high levels of conversation, high levels of social cohesion, bang, then we've got a winner, right? So it's really important when we look at this from a measurement perspective that we don't just caught up in just measuring these things that I think in the left-hand slide, you know, we've talked about vanity metrics and those sort of things. We don't just talk about how many people viewed my post and how many things did, you know, how many likes did I get. That's actually not the thing that really drives value. So linking this back to the little exercise we have about north and the direction, when we need to put in measurement around our Yammer networks, so a couple of things that are important. If we haven't got that strategic alignment about what is it we're actually using it for, if we haven't gone through the exercise that Stephen was talking about, saying what are the use cases, what are we going to use it for, then it's going to be hard. So we've got to find out what is our company about, what role does Yammer play in that, and then we can think about how to measure that. And there are different things you can measure. As I said, there are some that are more tactical, and there's some that are more strategic. If you look at this one over here, some typical hygiene health examples, you could just look at, well, how many groups do we have? How many users do we have? Are we active, inactive users, the volume of traffic? We had an organization where they were interested in finding out how much social stuff is going on our network. Is it just used being for social, or do people have business conversations? But it's kind of like quite sort of hygienic. The ones that are much more stronger related to business is things like, we wanted Yammer to enable sales and marketing to talk to some of the operational areas. Did that interaction happen? Did we really connect across our business unit boundaries? The two-way collaboration, and I've got a slide about that a little bit later, but are we using Yammer just as a comms tool to distribute messages? Or is it be used to have conversation? If it's really just used to have a one-way traffic from the central comms team, you gotta use another tool. Right? Yammer is supposed to have the conversation. That was the one that Thodi was looking for, the conversation with staff. And then you have transparency. Is all the conversation actually happening in private groups? If we have a goal of working out loud, you know, does that really work then? And then there's something I'll come back to about personas, which is really doing a much deeper dive into what sort of behavioral sort of traits do I show when I'm interacting with people on Yammer. So the takeaway from this is that you've got to think about setting a direction for where you want to go, and then the measurement bit really becomes kind of your GPS that tells you whether or not you're getting there. But just like a GPS will never tell you where to go, it'll just tell you how you're going to get there. Unless you know what you're going to be using Yammer for, it's going to be impossible to measure anything that's meaningful that comes from that. Now, Dean here, he sort of runs the Yammer initiative at KFC. One of the strategic challenges they had at KFC, they've got about 10,000 people on a network that goes across all their restaurants in Australia. And what they really wanted for them was two things. They wanted to get all of their staff off of these private Facebook groups. So that was one motivation to get into Yammer. And they wanted staff to just collaborate within the existing restaurants to coordinate rosters. Just talk about, you know, and get the team members to talk to each other. They also want to have a bit of sharing of ideas with head office about marketing campaigns and TV commercials that were running and telling people what was happening. So that was one objective. And the other key objective was they had lots of people that were out in the restaurants. And it had been previously been quite hard for the regional managers to have any kind of conversation with the people on the front line. So they thought, how can we would, Yammer is the platform that allow all of our staff to talk to the management team. That's what we want to do. How can we see whether that's happening? So if you take this view of measurement and say, well, here we have a matrix that shows all the various KFC restaurants over here and then across as well, and you can see all these little dark orange squares represent some strength of how much interaction are we seeing. And you can see there's a diagonal pattern, right? That's telling us that all the interactions, that most of it is happening within each of the restaurants, which is exactly what they wanted to do. They just want people on there and start having conversations within the restaurants. I can also show you this in a slightly different way. And here we show the interaction patterns between. And you can see RSC here in the middle is actually the regional management center. And you can see how they are reaching out to all the stores. But the stores aren't really talking amongst themselves that much. And that's fine. That's what they wanted to achieve. So kind of like, you know, strategic objective, is it being met? Bing, move off to the next one. We're actually using Yammer the way that we thought it was going to be used. The second key objective, how do we make sure that the managers are talking to people on the front line? Well, if we look at the interaction patterns again, and just focus on this one over here, here we have team members, here we have assistant manager, and here we have the regional general manager. And the bold lines tells us how much traffic that's been between these different hierarchical levels. And you can see that there's a little nice little closed network here. So the regional managers are talking directly to the team members, celebrating successes, and there's actually interaction happening between them. It was the same as Thodey's, if you like, vision of being able to get feedback straight from the front line and then feeding it back into the head office. So avoid some of that filtering that can go on. So being able to provide feedback on your strategic intent, it's actually pretty important. So you can drive. It's think about the GPS, you know. Make sure you can take corrective action if that's required. Now, these are all very sort of high-level strategic objectives. But you know where change happens, right? It actually happens and it starts with the individual. So I'm going to take you through some of the ways in which and get you to think about how many of you are active Yammer users. Just get your hand up. Hey, fantastic. All right. So, have a think about this. Have five different personas that we operate with. Observers, you can guess who they are, right? We have a broadcaster. You can probably guess what they do. Responders, you can probably guess what they do as well. And then you've got catalysts. They're really good at starting conversation. And engagers, they are just really good at doing all of it. Now, we showed Simon Terry's maturity model before. I want to show you how you can jump as an individual between these various modes of operation. Some people do it deliberately, and other people, they just get stuck into one. So Simon here, he put out a note, don't outsource your leadership interactions in this network, blah, 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 typical blog post. I've done lots of these. Now, what do you think the reaction of it? Well, you can see that. What was the reaction that Simon got from this one? Nothing, right? Now, that's not necessarily because Simon doesn't know how to interact with people. That's just, this is the kind of post that leads to that sort of result. He knows that. He just wants to get something out there. He wasn't looking to start a conversation. He just wants to share something with people. Now, Simon knows how you start a conversation as well. So Simon posts this thing. What's your big plan for 2016? What goals are you getting excited about in the new year? Let's try working out loud and our goals make them happen. At mentioning people, asking questions, and certainly, you know, suddenly 33 replies. This is a catalyst. How catalyst works. So you can have, as an individual, you can be very smart about how you deliberately choose to be either a broadcaster, or you choose to be a catalyst, or you choose to be a responder. But you have to know about yourself and your own style. So I'm going to ask you some questions. Think about your own, the own way that you guys use Yammer on an everyday basis, right? So there are 10 little statements here. I want you to think about whether which ones you agree with. I post links or attach interesting content that I think what people want to know about. Is that you? I post updates to my team and colleagues about things they need to know. I call out colleagues for a job well done. I ask people for help with problems or challenges. I reply to requests. This is about being interested rather than being interesting, as Steve talked about. I often prompt people to participate, so, you know, at mention stuff. I hit like when I want to show support and agree with something. Do you do that? When you think about your own post, do they get replies and likes? Or are they like Simon's post? Is all your posts like Simon's? And you look like I've done previously, well, why don't you collaborate? I'm sharing stuff. Why don't you like it? Are you being encouraged by others? Are you being ad-mentioned? Are you being called out to say, hey, Kai, hey, Brian, hey, Mary, can you help out with this? Or are you one that's just, you know, you read them, but you don't really participate much? Now, if you said that one, you're obviously an observer. It's sort of all right, but it's not really what we want. Really like you to participate. Now, if you said, I do the top bit, you fall into the broadcaster category. It's okay to be that from time to time. And for some people, it's maybe okay to be that the whole time. But for most, it's not all right. It's meant to start a conversation, right? It's not meant to just be a dumping ground for trying to be interesting. Now, if you those two down there, I reply and I hit like, you're much more like the responder style. So you wait, right? You wait until other people, you go in and you participate. And if you are a catalyst, then you sort of, you just, you're like the David 30 post. What are your top time wasters? What can we fix? Boom, you know, the conversation just, you know, really takes off. And if you said, I do all of it, fantastic. You're what we would call engagers. That's not easy to be there. It requires you to be interesting and interested. It requires you to participate and people reacting with your own content, what you're sharing as well. So really have a good think about what are you actually doing. It's not just about what you're posting. It's also about what you post, whether you encourage other people to participate, whether you like what it's being like and so forth. So as I said, the only people who don't like change are babies with a wet nappy, I think. So, but change starts with individual, right? And then nothing like a bit of transparency. So what we like to do, we like to create a bit of transparency. And we like to show leaders what sort of style that they have. There's nothing for executives if they're showing a bit of giving a little bit of competitive tension here. So why not show them what they actually are, right? So over here you have different personas. And you can see that here we have the head of occupational health and safety post, 1,711 posts. And how many replies have they made? 11. How many likes did they receive compared to what they're doing? Bugger all, right? Now, if this was the CEO, oh, that probably wouldn't be good. But you can imagine, what do you think the health and safety person is doing here? just pushing up, right? It's not necessarily the style that we're looking for. Now, then we got the senior vice president for operations responder. You can actually see that only 14 posts, but then they made 28 replies. So you see, they wait, they hold back, and then they wait for others to participate. The interesting thing is that we sort of have a tagline saying, seeing how you work changes how you work. And it really becomes very insightful for people when you get an understanding of what sort of personality am I, what sort of persona do I have, and is that the best one for me to be active on the network? Now, should I be, as a senior person, how do I become an engager? Now, we're working with a financial services organization, and a senior executive, she used a comms person to basically write all of her posts. She figured out that that's not a good way of engaging with people, because you can't get your senior comms person to like for you. You can't get a senior comms person to write replies on your behalf. And this style becomes very, you know, it's very obvious, right, when a comms person has written something as opposed to when you've written it yourself. So Yammer participation cannot be outsourced. Sorry. And you, if you're even thinking, if some of you even have a comms person to work with, then don't do it. It's too obvious. It's too polished. And what people fall in love with is the authenticity. And it doesn't matter if there are typos and everything in it. Now, very briefly, I had a very, very painful learning experience myself. So this is me, as you can see over there. And I was called out as a broadcaster. And my knee-jerk reaction was, of course, to blame everyone for that, right? Why didn't you like my stuff? Like, why didn't you reply to me? And I was just like, it's all you, I said to my colleagues. Why? What's wrong with you? And Laurie, who's sitting over on the right-hand side, he said to me, well, Kai, have you thought about what you're posting? And that just hit me right smack bang in the face. And I thought, what do you mean? You mean I have to do something different? So you don't like my post with the link to the Harvard Business Review story? And he said, well, like, what are we going to do with it, Kai? Like, and you post you've been out visiting a customer, like, so what? And it was really hard to digest that. So I had to change. I had to change the way that I use Yammer to engage with my colleagues. And that wasn't easy. And sometimes, in some weeks, I still fall into the old broadcaster mode because I don't feel I have the time to think about how do I frame this in a way that that encourages feedback. But I'm getting better at it, and I have periods where I'm an engager, and I take sort of great pride in that and try to stay an engager. But it's an ongoing. You have to be sort of quite considerate in your way of the way that you choose to engage on Yammer.
Good. So we've got a few minutes left. Well, 10 minutes left. For questions, if anybody has any. I think just to summarize what we've been talking about, so we wanted to share some stories of success that we've had with some of our customers and some of the things that they do that have made the Yammer networks work. How they've identified their strategies, they've worked out business cases that map to those strategies, and then they've started to roll out those use cases on tools to help then generate activities that back up that strategy. And then we've shown you how you can measure for that sort of things, the sorts of measurements that are important, looking at social cohesion, looking at activity and the combination of those, and then identifying the groups that work and the groups that don't work. And then finally, we've wrapped up with stories of individuals, how you personally can shape the activity within your Yammer network and how you can work with the senior leaders within your organisation to help them think about better ways to use the network to engage. So I think that's sort of the summary of what we want you to think about as you roll your Yammer networks out, as you start your journey, or as you look at your existing Yammer network and think, how can we get more business value out of this? Yammer is a really great tool. It can be a fantastic tool for breaking down boundaries in the organisation, for having social conversations, but we really encourage you to think about ways that you can use it as a business tool and get that productivity benefit from it. So the takeaway, I think, engage with your business leaders, work out what are the activities, what are the pain points in the organisation that you could address with technology, and how can you map that against the organisation's strategy? How can you point everybody in the same direction and get technology to back that up? Think about how you're going to drive adoption and what activities and behaviours do you want to generate on your network to drive that business value, to get people connected, to help them find other people in the organisation that can solve their problems. Have a bit of a strategy around that. build up your community and your leaders within the community, praise them, encourage them, so that they will then drive those activities on your behalf, and get help with adoption if you need it. The one example, or one idea takeaway, if you've got a Yammer network and you want to make it better, there's lots of user groups, responsive org events that Steve talked about this morning. Get along to those and collaborate with other people who have Yammer networks, who find out what works for them and what's not working for them.
We have one here in Australia called the Australian New Zealand Customer Community that Microsoft facilitates. It's an awesome community with people that are living this every day that you can learn from, connect with, and talk to. It's a really good community. There's the tech community at Microsoft as well. That's really good. We encourage you to join. And Steve, are there any other communities you can think of that we've inadvertently left out? There was the Yammer service update community that we talked about. Any other communities you think it's worthwhile? The key ones, okay. And also, as I said, we run this Yammer benchmarking study. It doesn't cost a thing to participate, and it'll allow you to compare your organization. We've got about 50 other organizations in the benchmark. It'll allow you to compare and see how do we sort of stand up against similar-sized organizations. And that can either you can use that to pat yourself on the shoulder and say, yes, or you can use that as an excuse to go to management and say, we need more money because we're behind, or whatever you could use it for. It's really up to you.
Okay. All right.
Any open for questions in the time we got left, or you can come up and chat with us afterwards. Actually, yeah, a couple of questions.
Is the size of the Yammer deployment, is a smaller Yammer deployment as successful as sort of a larger company?
So the question was whether a smaller deployment is more successful and larger, or the other way around. I don't know, what have you got views on that?
Yeah, I mean, we have customers of all sorts of different sizes, and I think it really comes back to what's your business objective for using it, right? Our organization, we've got about 75 consultants around the world. We use it to break down geography, to work out, you know, we're doing the same sorts of things in different locations. We talk about which customer problems we have, how we're solving them, tech updates, all this sort of stuff. And that, as a network, works really well because it keeps a really good level of consistency across our organization. For large organizations, different set of problems, right? Geography is definitely one of them, but often it's about business process or it's about inefficiency in the organization and helping to use the network to drive that out, or connecting people from different areas who can solve problems, or whatever it is in your organization. So I think that size doesn't matter so much, but the problems that people within organizations of different sizes vary. And the most important thing is you identify the problems you want to solve and use the technology to solve those problems and communicate to the organization to say, Yammer's here, use it for whatever you like, but here is one thing that we think we can do on this network really well.
Yep, so, yep, go.
I don't know if you guys said very much, but how do you deal with competing questions? So whether, obviously, we're talking specifically about Yammer here, but the concept of social collaboration comes up more broadly. Inside organizations, we have people raising questions, as an example, about Facebook workplace and other tools. How do you position Yammer as a tool of choice?
I think, yeah, we like to position within the Office 365 suite, and it serves a very, very particular purpose within Office 365. Steve mentioned this in his presentation as well. Teams and groups, I really consider that to be driving cohesion, but they're not really great for connecting people across the enterprise. So Yammer is much stronger for that. Workplace can probably do something similar, but it's just it misses out on all the other integrations you have into Office 365. So yeah, we don't know. Normally, when I talk to people, they're sort of already. I don't really get involved in the decision between the two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the sort of things we've talked about here work just as well across those different other platforms. But the gap that's missing, and we've heard a lot about groups this week. The fundamentals of Office 365 going to be powering the Yammer network. Start to get really amazing new features coming through, like security synchronization, where you can share a document out of an Office 365 SharePoint library into a Yammer group, automatically grants permission to that group, have a conversation about that document in a way that you couldn't with those other standalone tools.
Trying to find
Within Yammer, you can obviously export the data, and you can get some of the number of likes and count the comments and those sorts of things to do a crude first pass. The tool that I mentioned, Sideways 6, automates a lot of that. It's worth having a look at if you're doing these sorts of things regularly, and will help to sort of give you a very nice automated funnel and does all sorts of other, you know, tagging and review boards and all of that sort of stuff. But you can certainly do it through exporting out. It's obviously, you start to get scale, it can be a bit of a time-consuming process. But, I mean, using the export of data out, you can get the post, the like count, the comment count, all that sort of stuff, and use that as a first pass. I think it is important, and I mentioned it in, you know, that process, to get experts involved at some stage, though. So you need to work out what are the criteria that you want to assess the ideas on, you know, and get people that are qualified to evaluate those, probably before looping back to senior leaders to say, we've gone through this process, we've narrowed it down, here's your shortlist.
I'm pretty sure that the 30 didn't put that up just like on a Saturday afternoon, so I'm just going to ask, you know, because when you get that sort of thing out and having that many replies, you can imagine that if they chose to do nothing, that would have been detrimental. Right, so when you ask for feedback, you've got to be prepared to then review it.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on the size of the organization, how much sort of support you need in doing that. Okay, if you've got any other questions, you're more than welcome to come up and talk to Steve and I, but thank you very much for coming today.